Chapter 116. And now the rest of the company, highly excited and interested, all was excepting Bishop, who had not the slightest idea that anything was going on, formed in one group round the fire in the next drawing room, and pretended to be chatting easily on the infinite variety of small topics, while everybody's thoughts and eyes were secretly straying towards the secluded pair. The chorus were excessively nervous, perhaps as laboring under the dreadful apprehension that some good thing was going to be diverted from them. Bishop alone talked steadily and evenly. He conversed with the great physician on that relaxation of the throat with which young curates were too frequently afflicted, and on the means of lessening the great prevalence of that disorder in the church. Physician, as a general rule, was of opinion that the best way to avoid it was to know how to read before you made a profession of reading. Bishop said dubiously, did he really think so? And physician said, decidedly, yes he did. Ferdinand, meanwhile, was the only one of the party who skirmished on the outside of the circle. He kept about midway between it and the two, as if some sort of surgical operation were being performed by Lord Decimus on Mr. Myrtle, or by Mr. Myrtle on Lord Decimus, and his services might at any moment be required as dresser. In fact, within a quarter of an hour Lord Decimus called to him Ferdinand. ... and he went, and took his place in the conference for some 5 minutes more. Then a half-suppressed gasp broke out among the chorus, for Lord Decimus rose to take his leave. Again coached up by Ferdinand to the point of making himself popular, he shook hands in the most brilliant manner with the whole company, and even said to Barr, I hope you were not bored by my pears? ... to which Barr retorted, Eaton, my lord, parliamentary. ... neatly showing that he had mastered the joke, and delicately insinuating that he could never forget it while his life remained. All the grave importance that was buttoned up in Mr. Tite Barnacle took itself away next, and Ferdinand took himself away next, to the opera. Some of the rest lingered a little, marrying golden liqueur glasses to bull tables with sticky rings, on the desperate chance of Mr. Myrtle saying something. But Myrtle, as usual, oozed sluggishly and muddily about his drawing room, saying never a word. In a day or two it was announced to all the town that Edmund Sparkler Esquire, son-in-law of the eminent Mr. Myrtle of worldwide renown, was made one of the lords of the Circumlocution Office, and proclamation was issued to all true believers that this admirable appointment was to be hailed as a graceful and gracious mark of homage rendered by the graceful and gracious Decimus to that commercial interest which must ever in a great commercial country, and all the rest of it, with blast of trumpet. So, bolstered by this mark of government homage, the wonderful bank and all the other wonderful undertakings went on and went up, and gapers came to Harley Street, Cavendish Square, only to look at the house where the golden wonder lived. And when they saw the chief butler looking out at the hall door in his moments of condescension, the gapers said how rich he looked, and wondered how much money he had in the wonderful bank. But, if they had known that respectable nemesis better, they would not have wondered about it, and might have stated the amount with the utmost precision. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.